this is the BBC. What have got the bits to bring to thee? Marriott's monologues, funny and clean, the best monologue writer that there's ever been. So listen and laugh, join in, take part in Marriott Edgar's works of art.
We present Marriott's Monologues, the monologues of Marriott Edgar. Accompanied on the piano by Brian Fitzgerald, here is this week's monologist, Kenneth Waller, with Asparagus.
Mr. Ramsbottom went to the races, a thing as he'd ne'er done before, and as luck always follows beginners, won £5, no less and no more. He felt himself suddenly tempted to indulge in some reckless orgy, so he went to a cafetiera and had a dressed crab with his tea. He were crunching the claws at the finish and wondering what next he would do, when his thoughts turned to home and to mother, and what she would say when she knew. The mother were dead against racing, and said as she thought 'twere a sin for people to gamble the money unless they were certain to win. These homely domestic reflections seemed to cast quite a gloom on Pa's day. He thought he'd best take home a present and square up the matter that way. 'Twere a bit of a job to decide on what best to select for this year, so he started to look in shop windows in hopes as he'd get some idea. He saw some strange stuff in a fruit shop, like leeks with the knobby ends gone. It was done up in bundles like firewood. Said Pa to the shopman, "What's yon?" "That's asparagus, what the tops eat." "For the answer," said Pa, "that'll suit. I'd best take a couple of bundles, for mother's a bobby for fruit." He started off home with his purchase, and pictured Ma all the next week eating asparagus fried with a bacon, or mashed up in bubble and squeak. He knew when she heard he'd been racing, she'd very nigh talk him to death. So he thought as he'd call in the local to strengthen his nerve and his breath. He had hardly got up to the counter when a friend of his walked in the bar. He said, "What you got in the bundle?" "Present for mother," said Pa. "It's asparagus, stuff what the tops eat." His friend said, "It's a rum-looking plant. Can I have the green ends for me rabbit?" said Pa. "Aye, cut off what you want." He cut all the tips off one bundle. Then some more friends arrived, one by one, and all of them seemed to keep rabbits. Pa had no green ends left when they'd done. When he got home, the house were in darkness, so he slipped in as sly as a fox, laid the asparagus on kitchen table, and crept up to bed in his socks. He got in without waking mother, a truly remarkable feat, and pictured her telling the neighbours as 'twere asparagus, what the toffs eat. But when he woke up in the morning, it were nigh on 9:45. There were no signs of mother or breakfast. Said Pa, "What's she done with herself?" He shouted, "What's up there in kitchen?" She replied, "You do well to inquire. Them bundles of chips that you brought home is so damp, I can't light the fire."
You know,
If it hadn't been for the Marriott Edgar monologues, I might never have become an actor. It was like this. I was born in Huddersfield, but at the age of 3 and a half, my dad got a job in Hampshire, and we lived in a very small village called Hyde on the edge of the New Forest. Well, there wasn't a great deal to do there, apart from church on Sundays and the village whist drive on Wednesday evenings. Now, this didn't suit my mother at all. She'd sung in the Huddersfield Choral Society and the Leeds Festival, and she'd been conducted by Sir Henry Coward and Sir Thomas Beecham. She'd also been a leading light with the Huddersfield Amateur Operatic Society, and had played the lead in Maritana and the Bohemian Girl. She sang Iolanthe when I was 6 months old. So she got together with some other young people in the village and formed a concert party. Now, they called themselves the Optimists, and they played in village halls all over the county and made lots and lots of money for charity. Well, they were rehearsing one particular programme and suddenly realised there was going to be a big hold-up while the scenery was being changed, and most of the company were involved in changing their costumes as well. "Oh, that's all right," said my mother. "Our Kenneth can go in front of the curtain and do one of his little poems." That's how I found myself at the age of 4 and a half going on stage in a white velvet suit and reciting, "I've got a penny, a bright new penny. I took my penny to the market square. I wanted a wabbit, a little brown wabbit, but I couldn't find a wabbit, not anywhere there." Well, I'm glad to say I brought the house down. And I really think that the magic of that applause set me on the way to being an actor. It was during those concerts that I first heard Marriott Edgar's monologues, because my dad used to perform the Runcorn Ferry, you know, the one that goes tuppence per person per trip. And of course he also did the Lion and Albert. Another reason for my becoming stage-struck at such an early age was our regular weekly Saturday treat. We used to get on a wonderful little train that ran along the pier at Hythe to the ferry. It's still there. And then we went over the Solent on the ferry, which was called the Hotspur, to Southampton. We had tea at the Regal Cinema, and then we sat in the front row seats in the dress circle at the Grand Theatre. I saw everything from Macbeth to While Parents Sleep before I was 10 years old. I also saw Peggy O'Neill in Peg of My Heart. Ooh, I fell madly in love with her. Ooh, I could have got up to some hanky-panky with her if I'd been old enough. When I was 11, we went back to live in Huddersfield. Now, my granddad ran a billiard saloon in Lion Chambers, and he used to get complimentary tickets in return for putting up the posters advertising the current plays at the Huddersfield Theatre Royal. So every Monday night, you'd find me and my mother sitting in the best stall seats. It was at this very same theatre I made my professional debut. I shall always have a soft spot for the Marriott Edgar monologues, the Ramsbottoms in particular. They remind me of so many North Country people. Mrs. Ramsbottom, for instance, reminds me of my Auntie Clara, an indomitable old lady who lived to the ripe age of 94. And there was a gentleman who lived on Cowslip Street who looked exactly like the drawings John Haskell made of Mr. Ramsbottom in the Albert books. He used to tease me dreadfully and announce to the street, "Do you know what that Kenneth Waller's just told me? He says the ponies in bits. I mean, I ask you, ponies in bits." "But they do, Mr. Crawshaw," I said. "They do. They do have ponies in bits." "Don't be so daft," he said, with a knowing wink to all and sundry. He was a very epitome of Mr. Ramsbottom. In fact, I've got my father's original copy of Albert Harold and the Others in front of me as I speak to you now. Which brings me to the next monologue I'm going to do, Albert and the Headsman. On young Albert Ramsbottom's birthday, his parents asked what he'd like most. He set to see Tower of London and gazed upon Anne Boleyn's ghost. They thought this request were unusual, and at first to refuse were inclined. Till Pa said, "A trip to Metrollops might broaden the little lad's mind." He took Sherry Bank up to London and got there at 4:45. Then seeing the pubs wasn't open, he went straight away to the Tower. They didn't think much to the building, 'twant what they'd been led to suppose. And the bad work tower didn't impress them. They said Blackpool had got one of those. At last, Albert found a beefeater and filled the old chap with alarm by asking for the ghost of Anne Boleyn as carried a red neath her arm. Said beefeater, "You ought to come Fridays if it's ghost of Anne Boleyn you seek. A union now limits her output, and she only gets one walk a week." "But," he said, "if it's ghosts that you're after, there's Lady Jane Grace to be seen. She runs around chased by the headsman at midnight on Salt Tower Green." He waited on Green till near midnight, thinking it time for a sup. They took out what food they brought with them and waited for ghosts to turn up. On the first stroke of 12, up jumped Albert, his mouth full of cold dripping toast. With his stick with the horse's head handle, he pointed and said, "Here's the ghost." They felt the skins going all goosey as Lady Jane's spectre drew near, and Albert fair swallowed his tonsils when the headsman and all did appear. The headsman chased Jane round the grass patch. He saw his axe flash in the moon, and seeing his poor lass were headless, he wondered what next he would prune. He suddenly caught sight of Albert as midnight was on its last chime. As he lifted his axe, Father murmured, "We'll get the insurance this time." At that, Mother Rose, taking umbrage, she said, "Put that cleaver away. You're not putting our Albert's head up. Yon collar we're clean on today." The brave little lad stood undaunted till the ghost were within half a pace. And taking the toast he were eating, slapped it, dripping side down, in his face. It were a proper setback for the headsman. He let out one howl of despair, and taking his lady friend with him, he disappeared, just like that there. When Pa saw the way as they vanished, he trembled with fear and looked blue. Till Ma went and patted his shoulder and said, "It's all right, lad, we saw it too." Some say 'twere the dripping has done it, from a roast leg of mutton it came. And as the headsman had been a beef eater, they reckon he vanished from shame. And round Tower Green from that moment, they've ne'er seen the sign of a ghost. When beefeaters go on night duty, they take slices of cold, dripping toast.
Kenneth Waller brought you Asparagus and Albert and the Headsman by Marriott Edgar. Piano accompaniment was by Brian Fitzgerald. Marriott's Monologues is produced in Manchester by Mike Craig.